do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Wednesday nights. You know what that means. Mark Order Podcast Dynamite Review and Rampage Watch Along because of the scheduling that is taking place. We're so glad that you could join us and hang out. We see Lord Ken. Hello for always being so wonderful and supportive. But we've got a lot to talk about with Dynamite tonight. We've got Ryan, who is, I guess, having a late dinner over there, maybe chowing down a little bit. We got Asian Joe just showing off the guns over there. He might be in the gun club for all I know. I don't even think I knew that you were tatted up, dude. That's rad.
A man of mystery, yeah.
Yeah, me. Last week I was just an employee. That continues to be the case. But we are going to try this hybrid of a review show along with this Rampage Watch Along. Lot of action tonight, as we have two new champions at the end of the night. Waiting for the music to die at some point. Ryan,
I'll just kill it.
To go ahead and kill it. But
you're supposed to be a natural fade out. It didn't happen.
But we have a lot to talk about today with good old Dynamite. So let's dig in. I'm going to leave the watching along part to you guys to guide a little bit more since I'm trying to like keep track of my notes and move things along here. But before we do that, how are you, fellas? Ryan, you're chowing down on some leftovers over there. Hydrating. It's not drive. It's about power. We love that for you.
I stay hungry, so I need to devour.
I'm glad to hear that. That is the way of the world. That's just the way that the world works. But I'm glad you're doing well. Anything new? I've heard Collidercast was fun on Saturday. I couldn't join, but I heard good times were had by all. It was a hell of an episode of Collision.
Collision is on fire again. Nothing too new. Enjoying watching Powerhouse Hobbs and Kyle Fletcher beat up on Best Friends, even though I love the Best Friends. Ooh, muscle move by Hobbs.
Speaking of Collision, and to jump in here, sorry, Kate.
No, I'm colliding. Yeah.
I was going to ask you, how are you doing without the stage? We have been.
Oh, yeah. It's a good question.
Collision stage has not been there for weeks now.
It is difficult. I do love having the tunnels back. That makes me very, very happy. So that tempers the blow of it. We still do have like a really monster screen. So I appreciate that about it. But there will only ever be one Collision stage to me. And at the end of the day, it's the greatest stage of all time. It's the grandest stage of all time. So it is. Thank you for asking. And it's been an emotional experience.
I knew you had that deposit down. So you're going to get married on it one day.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't sure if it was refundable or what.
It is. I'm still working that out with Tony Khan, but Dan Housen's involved. Mark Sterling's involved. I think I'm going to come out better for it. We did discuss having like a bride tunnel and a groom tunnel. Like bridesmaids coming out one side, groomsmen coming out the other. So there's still options to play with, but what I'm going to need is like the Thursday night rate. If they're not going to give me the Collision stage, I'm going to need a deep discount for that eventual day, should it ever happen. But Joe, how are you? How was your week this week?
You know, it's been busy at work, but tomorrow's my Friday, so I'll take it.
Hell yeah. Love that for you. Eric Fried's asking if you have a license for those guns, which is a good question. Got to get the guns up, buddy.
You know, in our country, who needs a permit?
You know what? That's a sadly very, very fair point. But yeah, man, we've got some some good stuff on Dynamite to get through. We've got this going on. I think we can forego news and notes tonight just because this is going to be a lot of chaos going on. And a lot of it was kind of more about what happened on Wednesday. But let's dive in to this week's episode of Dynamite, which started with Mercedes Moné. A good promo from here with kind of some wonky ending, in my opinion. But she says that she almost got everything taken away from her 10 months ago when she had her injury. It was supposed to be a career-ending injury against Willow, which she emphasizes. That is all in the past, though, and she emphasizes that this is her new home in AEW and that she's here to lead a women's global revolution, not an evolution. She's already done that. So a big emphasis we're seeing early from Mercedes on this international front, which I think is very exciting and very cool. She came here to face the best women in AEW and all over the globe. She tosses her mic aside. She does her little CEO dance. And they come back to the ring and the lights go out. I thought Brody King was going to come here and kick Mercedes' ass, but much to my surprise, she's standing alone in the ring when Julia Hart is at the bottom of the ramp and Sky Blue enters the ring to attack her, but gets hit with the Moné maker. And then you have Hart sliding in and Mercedes grabbing her. And you get Willow Nightingale and Chris Statlander coming down with their own chairs, as the heels had chairs here as well. And they stand beside Mercedes. Lights go out. Julia Hart is smiling like a menace that she is. And they come back and only Willow has the chair with Mercedes back turned. Willow thinks about it and hesitates. And Mercedes turns around and they got some words to say. And it leaves. Now, this in the recap sounds great, what they laid out. There was something wonky about the execution here. I don't know if I have lights out, lights on fatigue. I think it was just weird. Something didn't translate in the acting with Willow on the holding the chair spot. Felt a little bit wonky to me. But I like the direction that they're heading in. I think the direction is paramount to the execution in this regard, because certainly feels like we're teasing Willow and Mercedes. The TBS title being involved in this is good. I mean, how long were we asking for segments that had this many women in it for logical storytelling, for these things to weave in and out? Very, very refreshing. And also just a huge opportunity for Julia Hart and Sky Blue to be working with a world-class talent like Mercedes Moné right off the bat. That just always reads as something that's very cool to me. So Ryan, I'll throw it to you first on this, because I tend to just leave you out sometimes. And as much as that,
you pop,
I guess what we'll do here is include you in the conversation. But what did you think of our opening segment? I failed to mention that we actually got a Mercedes Moné video package in here, which popped me to no end because of all the vignette talk that we got. The one person that everybody knows more than anyone gets the video package. What do you think on this kind of extended opening segment here?
I feel like the video package thing was done on purpose. I think they've heard the talk.
Yeah.
And they were like, screw you guys. Now, I mean, I think it's important to note that Mercedes is internationally known, and tonight she was known to rock the microphone. So it was important. Her promo was fine. I had heard about, I think it was kind of out there, but not really out there, how serious the injury was.
Sure.
I don't think people take ankle. I know this is not knock on it. I don't think people take ankle injuries as serious because it's not your head, your neck, your back. It's viewed as a less important part of the body.
What is it? Is it something?
Your ankle.
Her ankle went crack. So it's
wow.
Crack in multiple places. So multiple surgeries.
I mean, it's very serious. I'm not saying it's not serious.
My back.
Oh.
Yeah, well, did you not even realize you were doing that?
No, I did, but I didn't continue because I was like, that's kind of filthy, and I'm not a filthy boy.
Wow, but you are someone that commits to bits, so that's alarming, but as you were.
Yeah, well, I am how I am. So the part that was awkward for me is, it is my least favorite trope, what they did tonight. Not my least favorite. It's one of my least favorite tropes. Not my least favorite, but one of where Willow's standing behind with a chair, like, I'm gonna do it. Am I gonna do it? I don't know. And then Mercedes turns around and gets mad, and I hate that trope. It just doesn't make any sense. One, Mercedes literally all of 3 minutes before said she had an issue with Willow she needed to have solved. So why wouldn't Willow want to take a shot at Mercedes? It's not like they're friends. But two, no one believes Willow is actually going to swing that chair. It's Willow. She's light and purity. They only ever do this with someone who's not going to swing the chair, and that's why I get annoyed. It's like, do it the one time someone actually does it, I'll feel much better.
Yeah, it is a little boy who cried wolf syndrome with this spot. It does feel a little out of place for her, and I think that's why the execution was a little bit fumbled, in my opinion. But anything going on this Rampage episode that we should recap real quick before I throw it over to Joe?
Best friends and Cal's family are having a banger. Kyle Fletcher just dove out of the Tope Suicida, but there's a whole bunch of real cool moves. Like, this is a spot fest. You'd love it.
That sounds like something that would be up my alley, because I love to call spots, and I am the only member of the Mark Order podcast that is licensed to. I give Joe a lot of permission to more often than not, but no spots to talk about here. We're just talking promo opening the show. Joe, what did you think of our opening promo here?
It was fine. I enjoyed the fact that she kind of reinforced her mission statement of, you know, leading this global revolution and kind of putting her priorities out there and why she's there. Kind of going along with what we were talking about with the lights on, lights out with Willow and Stat and Julia and Sky, the chair spot seemed a little out of place, a little forced to create tension when I don't think you actually had to do it that way. I would have probably preferred if Willow had a chair still, but instead of doing the whole, you know, looking at the chair, looking at Mercedes, just keep her eyes straight at Julia or Sky, so she's not even looking at Mercedes, and then Mercedes just turns around and sees her behind her, thinking that, you know, she
kind
has
of misinterpreting it. Yeah.
That would make more sense to me. But
I like that call, and I think the big thing was that they were alluding to was Willow says later, right, that she has more street fights than anybody on this brand. And I think that's what they were trying to get to. It just didn't read that way. So I'm with you. Any particular spots that you liked about this promo?
Nothing I can think of now. I want to save all my spot requests for later.
Okay. Very fair. Very fair. Perhaps even for matches, which I can't argue is a sound strategy, Joe.
Best friends win.
Best friends with the W. Dang. Yeah,
I mean, okay. They're the more established team over that Callis family, at least that iteration of Callis family.
Yeah, I don't know how long the Callis family is going to be around now that Ospreay is here. It feels like they are sending that in a very different direction. But good for best friends. I also did see their cool outfits. They always have great outfits, so that makes me happy. But Kyle Fletcher is a superstar and should be treated as such and booked as such. So hopefully more W's on the horizon for them, but good for best friends. That makes me very happy. Speeding along to something that I don't think was an upset, but I really think this could have gone either way. We get Okada versus Eddie Kingston for the Continental title. Now, they have clarified that it is now you're defending just the Continental title. The ROH title and the New Japan Strong title are not mixed up in this. And the way this is going, I think that's going to be something that I really like. This match ends with Eddie dropping off a hold and hitting a big enziguri. Kind of waits for Okada to stand back up and tries to backfist him. But Okada ducks and hits him with a slam. Lifts Eddie up for the Rainmaker. 1, 2, 3. We have a new champion. This is certainly the fastest someone's ever come into a company and won a title. Some spots that I really appreciated in here. One storytelling spot of you just got to love Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, right? Like the backstage here with them and the headsets on. Really, really, really fun stuff. In-ring wise, very fun to see Okada hit a monster DDT on Eddie pretty early in this. And then his facial expressions smiling like an idiot after that spot, but his facial expressions all matched were so good. I was paying attention even in picture in picture. Like, that's how good these two guys are. And post-match, we get Pac walking out and staring down Okada, to which me says, Ryan really did kill the rankings with the rankings rap. Like, they are just dead, 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 dead. I hate that they
ranking song. Get it right.
Okay, but either way, like, you killed the rankings. I hate that they brought them back for one storyline, for like one small piece of one storyline, and then just threw them off a cliff. That bugs the crap out of me. But we have a new champion. Now, my take on this is Eddie's going to lose this title, and then he'll probably lose his other titles, and then set up for a monster heel turn. I am excited because I have seen heel Eddie outside of AEW. I know we had that beginning chapter doing some really great work with Moxley. But I feel like that was pandemic era and post-pandemic. He's mostly been a monster face ever since the exploding barbed wire death match where things didn't explode. But I have seen some really vicious Eddie Kingston promos. If you want to see a great one, he cuts one on Ilya Dragunov that is unreal. So I'm excited for the direction it's heading in. I feel like Eddie's run from the beginning of the C2 till now, while it was a brief title reign, accomplished so much. He won Danielson's respect in it. He beat the entire Blackpool Combat Club getting to that point, right? So, of course, I'm heartbroken that Eddie is no longer holding a title, but I think it's the right move. And I think Okada being the first person to come in and win almost immediately is something that is like special to him. I think it's a good part of his legacy. And yeah, I also should have called out those incredible drop kicks that guy has. Holy shit. Unbelievable that he gets that much air and spring for a guy his size. But we're going to start with you, Joe. And we'll see if we get around to actually asking Ryan his thoughts on this. But were you expecting a new champion tonight? I kind of thought it was going to go this way, but
no,
wouldn't have been surprised if they ran it back or something. Like,
right. I expected Okada to win this because it fits the story of him being with the Elite. And I think it kind of telegraphs the Elite or the Jacksons, you know, the Young Bucks winning the tag team titles here in the very near future, I think. So they have more power and control. But the match itself, you know, if we didn't have that street fight, the main event, it could have easily been the main event.
Yes.
I kind of forgot about the street fight for a minute. And I was thinking to myself, why this match the first one? But you were talking about the, you know, ducking the spinning back fist. No one wants to get fisted,
let
alone back fisted.
Did you want to talk about spots?
I will now. I have like one or two if you allow.
Okay, well, you are granted. It just sounded like you were talking about a spot out of turn, and I didn't want to have to find you.
I was building on the spot you had mentioned earlier.
Understood. Okay. So, a referential spot calling is something that will allow for only you, Joe.
And I liked the fact that it was kind of a continuation of their six-man tag match they had, where they kind of beat the ever-living hell out of each other to start with. And one of the spots I wanted to call out was just the way Eddie blocked the Rainmaker the first attempt.
Yes. With
the double forearms. But he still sold it where you could tell the Rainmaker was still powerful enough to knock him down and stun him.
Sure.
Didn't quite have the full effect. I thought that was kind of a clever way of defending that. But yeah, I think you mentioned the drop kicks, and I'm like, that's a beautiful drop kick. The extension,
the precision. Out of control. Out of control. Good stuff from Okada. Now, Ryan, I saw some people saying online that this didn't have the big fight feel to it, but that they ultimately agreed with the booking and stuff. Did you feel like this had the gusto that it should have? It going on first after a promo did kind of take the air out of the tires a little bit, but nothing too crazy.
So I don't think it had the big fight feel at all. I like the match. There's nothing on the match. I think the buildup just non-existent. You had a low blow. You had and by the way, Shibata just beat someone whose name I should know and I don't. It's not a AEW guy in his match. So, and now best friends and Adam Copeland are with the Top Flight are celebrating backstage. And so there's nice. Daniel Garcia and Matt Sydal. So just in case, It wasn't, again, the match itself was great. It just didn't feel like it had the build or feel that you normally would expect. And I think it's because of where it went on. It wasn't the first thing. It didn't open the card, which you would expect for this. Open or close is usually where the...
Sure.
It would have a better feel. But once the match starts, you lose that right away. It doesn't really matter. I'm not going to call out any spots in particular. Well, no, I'm going to call out one. I'm not going to ask permission. It's that first chop. And he chopped Okada, and Okada reacted like, oh my God, what happened? And commentary pointed it out immediately. And I think the story was very well told that the brutality of Eddie Kingston was at times overwhelming to Okada, who eventually obviously recovered and won. But that was the story. Okada is the better, more technical wrestler, but Eddie Kingston's sheer brutality is hard to overcome. And like late in the match when he chopped him and Okada went down to one knee, that's another spot I'm calling out. And I don't care if it gets called out a million times. I have to call out what spots I remember. So I think commentary did a good job. Joe addressed the blocked
Rainmaker. Joe had permission to, yeah.
Yeah, I don't care. Commentary kind of pointed out, like Joe said, that it carried through. It wasn't okay, it's your favorite, Rocky Romero.
Rocky!
Commentary pointed out that he was able to carry it through. So all that was great. I really enjoyed the story. I think it makes a ton of sense to put it on Okada. Give him a belt, make him feel special immediately. He can walk around. He can have some good matches. And now we can watch the downfall of Eddie Kingston as he becomes insane. And I am here for that.
I'm looking forward to the downward spiral thing of like, I lost one, I still got two. And then I lost two, I still got one. And I'm going to lose my mind trying to defend it. And then him just going absolutely bananas. So I think it's going to be very fun. And I think a heel Eddie is something that'll be refreshing. I love Eddie so much. But I feel like that is a good move and a good direction to head.
Do you think that'll make fans like him even more then?
I'm very intrigued to see how they do it. I think you're at risk with it because people love cheering for Eddie Kingston. But I will say he does some extremely effective heel work if you look up some of his old stuff. The pandemic era stuff was good. Like, he's a bad man. He's a bad, bad man. If you look up some of his... He did this promo with Dragunov where Dragunov was dead. He was just dying. He died in the ring. And because Dragunov is so good at selling, he's just, like, sitting there twitching. And Eddie Kingston does this whole promo about how he is tired of making new stars for NXT, for Impact at that time. Now all these people in F and AEW. And at one point, he just picks him back up and scoop slams him, even though he's, like... You know when you see, like, it's said, like, a little, like, you kill a bug and it's, like, still twitching or whatever? Like, if you spray Raid on a bug and it's, like, still just, like, fluttering, that was him. And Eddie just kept, like, picking him up and scooping him down. Worth looking up that promo if you're looking to see, like, vicious heel Eddie. But I think that he can elicit the reactions he's going to need to. I think it might take a minute because people are going to have sympathy for the downfall. I think that's extremely possible.
I mean, so we go back face stage. Eddie was going to light a guy on fire.
It's true. Like, that's kind of the beauty of Eddie Kingston and a lot of AEW presentations is it's just leniencies into one way or the other. We talk about that with the Blackpool Combat Club all the time, right? Like, Danielson low blow Jun Akiyama for no real reason the other day, and then Eddie Kingston earns his respect and he's a babyface again. Like, it's just... If it's just these tweaks and mentalities, it's a really refreshing thing. A really refreshing thing. Anything we should be checking in on with Rampage?
No, we are in picture in picture with Takeshita beating up Rocky.
We went to picture in picture. It felt right. Felt right.
Am I lagging to you guys?
RIP, Rock. You are not lagging to me, no, sir.
Oh, because you and I see our timing seems off. There seems like a delay when I say it to your response. And it feels laggy because it's not natural. It's not like a natural delay. That's why I asked.
No, you can refresh if you need to, though. I can keep the train moving with Joe if you want. But we go backstage with Swerve, who's with Renee, and she asks about his intentions with his chain and Samoa Joe. He says his intention is what it always is, the title. That Joe tried to humiliate him by choking him out, and Swerve has a history of choking people out himself. So tonight in Toronto, he's been inspired by Mike Tyson's training, which I thought was a fun little pop cultural reference. It offers an open challenge tonight. He said anybody can come see him. Just make sure that you send a big man. It was not Paul White. He said a big man, not a big show. And then real. I'm going to recap this women's promo too, and then I'll get your guys' thoughts on both of them. But Willow says after tonight, she will have been in more street fights than any woman on the roster. So don't get things twisted. And Chris warns Julia and Sky that she meant what she said. This will not be the end of things. And in walks the CEO. Chris walks up to her, says thanks for having Willow's back, and extends a handshake. And Monet kind of shakes it off, like doesn't really shake her hand. And she says payback is a bitch and thanks for having her back as well. And Willow walks up to her and wants to say something, but Mercedes tells her that she has done enough. And Stokely tries to introduce himself, but Mercedes walks away and he tells Willow that she did break her ankle. So loved what Swerve had to say. And with the women's segment, I actually really liked Stokely very quickly pointing out, like, you did break her ankle. Like, this little addition makes things so real feeling and good, and justifies Mercedes kind of not, she just got here. She shouldn't trust anybody yet. And just because Willow is wonderful and bubbly and accidentally broke her ankle, she broke her ankle. So loved Stokely's role at the end there and loved the tension that's being built. But Joe, we'll start with you. What did you think of the Swerve promo, this Swerve open challenge and walking around with the chain, and then this women's promo as well?
I like Swerve's promo. I like what he's doing as far as challenging himself and preparing himself for the rematch by wanting to take on bigger guys, since he's going to be facing Joe at Dynasty. So I think that makes a lot of sense. As we see later tonight, he gets a big guy, not like super big, but a big guy. I don't know if he even would be considered meaty, but
no, he'd be like in the junior meat division, I feel like. Mm. I mean, he is a butcher, so I guess
true.
He knows meat. He at least knows true. Ball.
And as far as the women's promo, backstage promo, I think it'd be a nice little setup for the Rampage main event, which I think foreshadows Mercedes' involvement or appearance in that match as well. Maybe great. She's the one holding the chair. But overall, I just love the fact that they stick with the continuity of what happened at another promotion. And they're able to bring that into the storyline and build off of that.
It's so much easier when stories write themselves than you having to write stories, or there's some sort of hybrid there, especially when AEW tends to present things in a more demonstrative way and less of a show and tell way. So that is something that plays really nicely in here. Stokely continues just to be one of the best managers of all time when they have him on a consistent track to do things. Like, he is excellent at his job. I really like what they're building out with this women's picture. I like that they pivoted from being a bit sillier to a little bit more serious. Ryan, what did you think of the Swerve Open Challenge and chain promo here? And then also our ladies.
So I think both segments did the same thing, in which it protected all participants. Swerve got to come out, say his piece. I'm a badass. I choke people out. Give me someone big to prove that I can beat up someone big, which is always great as like proof that you're, Joe's size isn't going to be an issue. And then Joe obviously cuts a hilarious promo too, because Joe's great. More focus on the Mercedes one only because it's newer. I feel like Swerve and Joe stuff is awesome, and I'm not sick of it at all. So I don't want to act like I am, but it's a continuation. So there's fewer new developments there. Sure. On the Mercedes stuff, obviously it's all new developments. What I liked was though that when Mercedes walked up, it was Statlander who pushed everyone aside and walked up first to protect her as like the like a star in that division. She's not. Who's saying Swerve's calling me out for a match at Collision? I could take him. I'm a big boy. But you know, I you don't want anyone to get lost in the shuffle with new you know, someone new comes in. So it was great that Statlander walked up and took the lead, but then immediately Willow gets her piece.
Yeah.
So no one took a backseat in this triangle, which usually doesn't happen. And yeah, the ending where Stokely's like, yeah, he broke her ankle, and Willow being like, Stokely, and Walker like, I just love it. It's, and Willow pointing out a very obvious that she's been in the most street fights for a woman in AEW, I think is a very cool fact that I'd never thought of, but very neat.
It is. It was really well done by her. I think the backstage promo was a little bit more effective than our opening here. But a lot of good stuff. And they really seem to not only be working on the things that we consistently talk about as far as storyline and screen time and all those things, but the talent rotation has also been so refreshed. It's been really, really good to see. Really, really good to see. By the way, Kate,
spoiler, Rocky and Takeshita had a great match.
Shocking. Truly shocking. Rocky's incredible and Takeshita's incredible. So I saw in the chat someone said that they were doing Tekker stuff that Rocky was. And don't be fooled by like the presentation of Rocky Romero and his like lucha history. That dude has a very, very, very well-rounded wrestling foundation. He can scale to any style very well. And I think that's why he has the career he has. He's extremely versatile. So I love Rocky. He's the best.
Well, Rocky loves Emily.
Well, Joni loves Chelsea.
Emily. Rocky loves Emily. Hey, I'm just saying, one of the three of us hosts a podcast about wrestling, wrestlers in movies, and there is a movie featuring three ninjas and a wrestler. Now, the wrestler is a scumbag, but still.
There's a lot of, unfortunately, wrestler is a scumbag movie appearances out there, so we are navigating that very gently, but trying to navigate Hook versus Jericho. Man.
Great suggestion. Just blown away.
Hook versus the Lionheart version of Chris Jericho. This match being built on the idea that Hook and Jericho need to face each other so that Jericho can kind of see what Hook is really made of, maybe learn something about Hook. And what I learned is that I think Chris Jericho isn't very good at wrestling anymore. This is tough. This is tough because I think they're trying to rediscover the value of Chris Jericho. It's definitely not as a face, but the in-ring has been rough. He landed on his, as our Fightful moderator Luis said, he DM'd me and goes, he landed on his dome in a lion salt and then he spiked Hook on the overhead. That's, yeah, basically it. And the ending wasn't great. Like when he was countering the red rum, he basically just caressed his fingers and was like, oh, I got out of it. Like it was not very good. I like Hook winning with the flash pin. But the story of Chris Jericho being a veteran who was more dominant, getting outpaced by Hook's youth, it didn't come across to me. It really didn't. Some really great suplexes from Hook in this, and Jericho took those extremely well. But we're really like on the back nine of Jericho's career. And it's part of what's tough with Jericho is like with Tanahashi not being what he used to be in New Japan, you can get away with it because of the guys he's working with and against a little bit. And the style that he wrestles and the fact that he's an absolute legend there. You now have Okada and Ospreay and Mercedes and Bryan Danielson and like these other legends in the making who I think just have more juice right now. This is tough. This is tough. I actually really liked the story of him being like, I faced your father. Because we haven't gotten that. Nobody's really referenced Taz a ton. The FTW belt was doing jack shit for a really long time. But Ryan, let's go to you first. I was a little bummed on the in-ring. I feel like it's a bad sign if Jericho's getting booed in Canada. That's not great. But people also really love Hook. What did you think of this match?
Is it me? Or has Jericho changed his style even within his time at AEW, but not for a positive? Like, I felt like earlier on, he avoided a lot of stuff he's now doing again, like the Lion Salt. Like, I didn't see that from him a lot. Now I feel like you see it all the time because he's doing the Lionheart gimmick. I'm like, maybe you should be away from that. and go more to the old man bruiser cheater thing.
I thought you said work team maker.
Yeah, I mean, essentially.
Like, the Judas effect is actually a great finisher for someone in his stage of his career, right? You can hit it out of nowhere. It is kind of that more brutal thing. And to Joe's point, when he went over to New Japan, he put on a shit ton of mass because he was like, in Japan, you're either the brick shit house or you're like a littler dude. And so he kind of adapted his moveset that way. I agree with you that the Lion Salt stuff, or the Lion, I mean, tonight the Lion Salt wasn't there at all, but the Lionheart stuff it isn't working for him right now. He definitely feels like he needs to adapt in one direction or the other, but that's a good point, Ryan. And Joe, I agree with what Ryan said and where you were kind of saying, like, maybe the Painmaker moveset is a little bit better. I think that would have been helpful in this match, especially against someone like Hook. But what did you think about what we got tonight?
Well, first of all, on Rampage here with Willow and Stat coming down, all in white, so we know we're going to get a lot of blood.
That's why my head was turned. I always find that hilarious. You're going into a street fight, so you wear all white.
Yeah. And Mark Henry's back to call for the main event.
Oh, nice. Good. Gory so, self-mutilation will be abound.
The Hook and Jericho match. It felt, it had the beginnings of Brock Cena with the whole suplex city of like just suplex and crap out Jericho for the first 5 or so minutes. But even in suplexes, like Jericho looked like he was struggling to take some of them on the landings. I feel like, I thought maybe it was intentional, but it feels like the last few matches, even before the ones with Hook and against Hook, I felt like I've been watching Jericho at like half speed. So maybe that's more just him slowing down now more than being on purpose.
He's definitely, definitely slower. Like, that is a big part of why the in-ring suffers, I think.
And then not referring to a spot you called already about to finish. I really would have preferred Hook to win with the Red Rum and have Jericho either pass out or tap out. I think that would have been more impressive and bigger help for Hook than the flash roll up. And I didn't care for, like you said, how Jericho broke out of the Red Rum so easily after Hook had it applied on the top rope with pressure, brought him down to the ring. I'm like, he should have sold that more than just being like, I'm going to pry your hands away.
I agree with you on that. I liked Hook winning with a flash pin because it showed he was smart enough to follow up the Red Rum, but I actually, probably the best thing Jericho did in the whole match was the way he sold the Red Rum, because he turned over a couple of times and you could see him trying to get out of it. His oxygen was getting cut off. If he had just passed out, you're right, that's a better ending. I liked the ring savvy smarts by Hook, but you're right in that if he just passes out there, that's also better for the story that they're telling of you know, Jericho trying to see what Hook's made of. If he's like, well, I didn't give in to that son of a bitch, but he still got the best of me, I think would have been better. So I'm with you on that. We get a vignette. So many vignettes today with Adam Cole, who is sitting in a lovely chair, looking very fashionable, saying that it's story time. And last week he sent Wardlow to win the title and Wardlow failed, and that he had one damn job and he failed at it. And right now Wardlow should be the new champion. And because he failed, he needs a new goal. So the new goal is to make sure that the rest of the Undisputed Kingdom keeps their titles. I'm guessing at Supercard, we see that not go the way that they want. And he does that and Adam Cole will forgive him. He cares about Wardlow and wants to see him reach his full potential. So don't screw it up, says Adam Cole. Ryan, this was a quick but effective backstage. I feel like the Undisputed Kingdom has been a little bit in the mud, but whenever we get just Adam Cole talking and making sense of things, it seems like we get a little bit of gusto around this. Your thoughts?
We'll talk about that in a second. I got to describe what I just saw. So Julia was, so a chair was open, like a folding chair was open. Mm-hmm. And Julia was put half through, so that her head's out one way, her legs are out the other. First, Willow runs and kicks her in the head. And then Statlander picks Julia and the chair up together and then slams her down so that she, like, bounces in the chair. I've never seen that before. Like, the chair landed back on all four legs with Julia still in the middle.
And then she got kicked.
And then she got kicked again.
Damn.
I've never seen that before. It was awesome.
Tough badass gals taking spots on TV today, it seems like. I'm looking forward to going back and watching that more properly than right now.
But back to what we were actually talking about. I just had to, like, literally...
No. It's supposed to be half a watch along. I'm just trying to...
So, anyone, that was incredible. I've never seen that before. But also, Julia and Sky, why not exactly matching gear, have the same theme, which I really appreciate.
That's all I ask.
I loved this promo from Adam Cole so much. Like, I should be champ, but without saying it. And then, honestly, the disappointment in Wardlow, because Wardlow is supposed to be this hired gun, and he failed. So now you have to change what he's used for, which is, of course, going to lead to dissension between the Undisputed Kingdom, and Wardlow, which is going to be fun. So I really liked it. And, of course, Adam Cole is a really good speaker. You know, he talks very naturally when he wants to, so it's fun. Julia accidentally spiked Sky with a giant nail in the head. So,
ow. Seems bad.
Yeah. And now Julia went through a table.
Joe, your thoughts on our Adam Cole promo?
I always love this heel version of Adam Cole. Not over the top, but just very sinister like villain of,
yes,
the mastermind, the puppet master of things, and him, you know, being generous enough to give Wardlow a second chance to help, you know, make sure that everyone else keeps their titles since he failed. But you said, I think the Kingdom, you know, drops their titles, so that'd be, you know, strike two. But then I'm wondering if down the road that Wardlow takes the belt off of Roddy. I think that might be interesting, but
that's a fun direction to go. I didn't think about that. That could be, maybe he can't protect the Kingdom, and then everybody gets pissed at him, and then he beats Roddy. Is a fun little trajectory to go. I like that. That's a fun call, Joe. I like where your head's at on that one. Well, bruvs, we move along to everybody's favorite golden doodle, Will Ospreay.
But he has pugs.
He has what?
He mentioned he had pugs at home. So
he's got pugs and cats and a wife and kid. Oh my, he's got a lot going on in his new home there. But everybody's very excited to see him. And I love that he kind of immediately acknowledges that he was very anti-Canada last time he was there. He was cutting all these social media promos of him miserable at the Niagara Falls and Maid of the Mist. Him miserable everywhere in Canada. He says that he was a naughty boy. But he's changed and he's here for the betterment of AEW. And he apologizes to Canada. It seems like Canada forgives him. They're very excited. And good stuff here. He says he's here to give us elite professional wrestling, but he needs some maple syrup in return. They turn his attention to Bryan Danielson and Shibata. He praises their match on Saturday, which he should, and he says he hopes people watch it because it was excellent professional wrestling here. But as for what Bryan Danielson said after, he said in one breath that he was grateful, and in the next breath that Will couldn't walk in his shoes, and he said that he was in Japan where Brian wanted to be a big star and he couldn't fit into his shoes because they were too small. To which I say Brits are obsessed with shoes and taking them off. It's very weird. But 7 years ago, he faced Shibata, and he is no longer 23. He's 30 and he has those pugs, kids, a wife, a mortgage, and a point to prove. And it sets up Ospreay and Shibata for next week, which is just an insane thing that we're getting under the AEW umbrella. The card for next week already looking like another banger episode. Great to see them in that groove again here in AEW, but this was great. Like, Will Ospreay's passion is unmatched. Like, he gets so excited. He's so hyped for his own theme. Everybody's elevated when he comes out. His passion really, really translates. And Ryan, I know that you love doing the United Empire theme, but we got Will Ospreay alone tonight, giving a great promo, making peace with Canada, calling out Bryan Danielson, setting up him and Shibata next week. Your thoughts?
We missed a real opportunity to have Will Ospreay in the company when Elevation was still around so he could be elevated on Elevation. Just natural. Looks like we're going overtime on the main event, by the way.
Not surprised. Yeah.
So, big fan. He's so happy. I just like that. I like happy characters. And actually, to Ophelia's comment in the chat, I'm actually okay with Canada tonight because the Flyers beat the Maple Leafs yesterday. So my mood just changes on a whim to how the Flyers lasted against the Canadian team.
Fair.
So I'm okay with O'Canada tonight, but this looks brutal match. You're gonna have to go back and watch this.
I shall.
But yeah, I'm excited for what Ospreay is gonna do, and I know he's got a foot fetish, so that's kind of weird. But other than that, very good. I'm so excited for Danielson and Ospreay, and it's such a natural story that what LT Colonel Photo is pointing out, Code Blue on the announce table was violent. Oh,
yeah.
So I just like that. Like, I try not to address all the stupid stuff that you hear online of like, oh, the stories and all, and oh, there's no story. But I know some people, it became a popular thing the other day, mostly dunking on the person who said, I'm better than you is not a story, because it very much is. And I liked it in this story. That's all it is. It's I'm better than you, which sometimes is the best wrestling story. Just I'm better than you.
I mean, my favorite presentation is New Japan, and I'm a Tekker sicko. So in-ring story for me is like, that's my favorite shit in the world, is when it just has to do with who's better at wrestling. So no arguments from me, but Joe, what did you think of this promo from everyone's favorite bruv?
Another fun promo by Will. I don't know if I just haven't paid attention, but did they add more to his entrance with the lighting effects, or has that always been a part of it? Where they kind of go like dark and then they raise up for the Ospreay chance, and
I think that was new in AEW so far. Okay. They changed his presentation. Like, I feel like because New Japan isn't weekly episodic, like, you kind of got something different a lot of times with Will. But I think they did, like, pump those up a little bit, to your point, tonight. For sure.
I just enjoyed the presentation. And I like the argument of, you know, Bryan being the best in the world, but then Ospreay kind of saying, well, you were the best in the world.
Yes, you're the best wrestler of the 21st century, I think he said. Yeah, that's like a nicely done way to go about business.
And I like the response to the rebuttal of him not being able to feel his shoes. And so he's going to, go tit for tat as far as wrestling guys who, Danielson beats, and to try to outdo him. And for all the accolades that Danielson has in the U.S. and how he kind of mashed them, one for one with his experience over in Japan, I thought that was a nice balance, a counterbalance to what Danielson was arguing.
That's a very good point, Joe. That was the place that Danielson wanted to go and be a big star, and he actually went and did it. Is a very good call, bruv. Now we move on to our women's match, and not only did we get two women's segments tonight, but we did have a women's match that carried through the commercial break, which is always good to see. That's technically a multi-segment match, and I thought it was a really fun one, man. I'm very impressed by Mariah May in the ring, but this is Thunder Rosa's night, and Deonna Purrazzo not so happy about it. We get Rosa getting a blind tag on Deonna. Tony Storm comes in and drops her hard, but May hits a headbutt to Deonna, and you get Rosa with the Death Valley driver. Tony is in a waistlock, but a German to Thunder Rosa, a hip attack. Tony trying for the pile driver here, and Rosa flipping over with that jackknife cover. I love jackknife pins and covers. Underrated in how much they feel like you're actually winning a match when you get them. Rosa puts her away, and Deonna is not happy about the blind tag. She's not happy about the fact that Rosa gets the win. God, please set me up for Rosa versus Deonna too. That match happened in Impact. It was excellent. These two work extremely well together and seem to be on the same page. Kind of felt like we were headed toward Thunder Rosa and LFI, but they haven't been around very much right now. So I'm not sure what's going on there. Would still love to see her in it, but my God, if this is a way to get to Deonna Rosa, please, 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 please. Fun little match tonight. I love what we're getting out of Mariah May too. I will not ever do anything but sing her praises when she's doing such great work here. But Joe, let's start with you on this. What did you think of our women's match tonight? And are you psyched that we might get this kind of Deonna heel-ish feeling character?
Well, speaking of women's matches, the main event just ended where Julia and Sky won.
Hell yeah.
So Julia tapped out Statlander, surprisingly.
Julia tapped out Chris.
Yeah, I feel like they don't miss when it comes to street fights and women's tag teams.
They do not.
They've always been really solid and booked well. So, but talking about the tag team match from Dynamite, it was a fun pairing with Thunder and Deonna, and especially, like you said, their history in TNA, and having Thunder, you know, kind of steal the win and be that person to pin Tony. I can't remember the last time Tony, you know, had been pinned since, you know, losing the championship the last time. That might have been it, maybe. So, no, that's obviously a big thing for Thunder, and having Deonna kind of have that insecurity and jealousy will be fun. And I hope they do that one-on-one match and they don't try to shoehorn into a three-way match at Dynasty. I prefer it to be one-on-one, but...
Agreed. That should be a one-on-one match. And you're right, Joe. And Ryan, as I throw this to you, there's also the elephant in the room of that Thunder Rosa never lost the title to Toni Storm. So her getting a victory here could certainly set up a title defense down the line if that was something that they wanted to do. Very, very good stuff here. And it's nice when there's enough history in this women's division now and across these women in all of wrestling that we're getting these really rich stories, right? Deonna and Toni had such a rich story going into it. Toni and Thunder Rosa have AEW specific history. So some good stuff happening in this women's division. Nice match tonight. Thunder Rosa is great. It's nice to see her kind of like back at full force in a match like this. But your thoughts here?
So first, as Scott pointed out, Stokely looked disgusted with Statlander and only helped Willow at the end. So that's another wrinkle there.
Interesting. Okay.
I usually, and I'm going to say usually, hate when a champ gets pinned. It's usually one of my least favorite things in wrestling. We have two of them tonight, but this is a lone exception because she got pinned by someone she never beat for the belt. There's a story there. It's a champ on champ crime, basically. And it adds such a level of intrigue to this story now because Thunder Rosa has a legitimate complaint that she never lost her belt. And oh, by the way, she's pinned Toni Storm. What has Deonna done?
Yeah.
So I think you're going to get a triple threat match probably, which I'm okay with in this case because it would settle all the stories together, which I think you need to address. But I just love it, the intrigue, the fact that Deonna kind of looks, and Deonna, who is very much a babyface in this, I don't think they're going away from that. Still, Deonna kind of looked a little petty, being mad that Thunder Rosa got the pin. So I just enjoy the depths of the story where everyone's being allowed to be more than just a stereotype of a character in wrestling. You know, Deonna can be both a babyface and a little petty.
And it seems like of pride, and it's not that she's mad that Thunder Rosa got the win, it's that she wanted it, right? So I think that's good. Some more people joining in the chat. Hi, Kylie. Hi, SJ. Very nice to see you. I hope you enjoyed Rampage. I'm assuming that you are hanging out here after. We're a little over halfway through Dynamite and moving along. But The only reason I don't want a triple threat with this is we just got a triple threat for the world title on the men's side. And I like that AEW doesn't do a ton of triple threats. There is enough story here, but I kind of like where things are headed. And I also don't like champions getting pinned at all, but I feel like it does add some intrigue to the Mariah May piece of this as well. So if it's going to happen, at least it's happening with intent, right? So we will take it. But some good progression in the women's division in both pictures. I like that both pictures are so crowded. There's a lot of women of AEW on my television, and that makes me very happy. We move along to Swerve Strickland versus the Butcher, who answers the call here. And what was a quick match, but an effective one. Nice to see the Butcher in action. I wish they would use Butcher and Blade more. Wish they were in this tournament for the tag division. I don't believe they are, which is kind of a bummer. But this ends with a house call. Swerve on the top rope and Butcher seated nasty stomp to the chest. But instead of a cover, he wraps Butcher's arms in a nasty submission, a short arm scissors as a finish, which I only know because Sean tweeted it. So he also tweeted, I guess he actually beat TNA's social media, which I didn't know you could do, but Swerve headbutted Butcher the same way that Kurt Angle did to Samoa Joe in TNA. So a nice little layer of championship storytelling with Swerve for Samoa Joe there. Good stuff on that. Butcher tapping out immediately to that short arm scissors, and an effective way to kind of move things along. Ryan, we'll start with you. What'd you think of this match?
Short, effective. Butcher is enough of a known entity that using him as your big guy that loses actually is valuable, as opposed to just like some rando that they pull in some. And that's not to knock any indie guys, but if you're not as known, the crowd won't take you seriously. Butcher's been around enough that beating him at least has some weight to it, even though he hasn't really won anything. There's something behind there. And I just realized the promo right after this I was confusing for earlier because I have the whole story locked in my head together.
That is actually normally how I like to host and present things and group things together. But there were so many moving pieces tonight. I said, why don't we take a breather on that. But Ryan, since you brought it up, anything you want to call out about the promo that we get after this Samoa Joe coming down to the ring, talking that shit, anything specific you'd like to call out?
No, I mean, because my point, the reason it all worked to me was that Swerve got to look awesome when he talked, and then Joe got to look awesome when he talked, and neither one of them made the other look bad, which I think is a rarity across companies. This is a rarity just in wrestling, where you have two head-to-head promos and somehow neither guy makes the other look bad. I always feel like someone comes out looking a little worse. So I was just really well done.
What I think is special about this situation too is I'm a big believer of the Jericho school of thought of if you tear someone down and then you beat them, you didn't really beat anybody because that you already tore them down, right? If you beat nobody, you beat nobody. But what's cool about this is there's still this piece of the story that is we're so evenly matched and unsettled, right? That triple threat was not a true test of what both of these men are capable of. And Joe, I think we got to see that advance here. And Samoa Joe was always just such a wonderful promo, but very quick match here, but an effective one. I like that Swerve is still doing things like using the change, using vicious submissions, because even though he's a face, he doesn't necessarily have to be baby face about everything. We did get some Don Callis business after this as well, but I'll recap that in a second. I'll get your thoughts on this first.
Short match. I thought Butcher actually looked, I thought he looked really good physically. Like, it's been a while since I've seen him on TV. He looked in great shape. As I mentioned earlier, it was nice to see Swerve get a win over a big guy as he prepared for Joe. And I think to Ryan's point, talking about how neither guy really, tore the other one down. I think that speaks to just how good each of them are at promos and at building matches and that, building up their opponents and how great they are on the mic. They're just, they're basically equals. And I think in the ring with Swerve adding more of the submissions, showing that to Joe that there's more to him than what he's seen already. I think that's just going to be add another level to their match, this in their singles match.
You know, something that's so special about Swerve is he has some size to him, and he can do some extremely agile stuff off the ropes. He can do submissions like this, and he can give you a crazy death match. Like, he's extremely versatile, and he's very good at all of the things that he does. He's an incredibly well-rounded wrestler, and I think sometimes it gets lost just how great he is at playing up to all of the things that he's challenged with. But Ryan, you were about to say something. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
I just, something that I forgot to mention that just cracked me up, and it was so well done, is the thing that, so Don Callis came out and cut his, like, he wants to be part of this promo, which, valid point, Takeshita has wins, so it'd be nice to see, Takeshita versus Swerve. But I love that the thing that bothered Don Callis the most, the biggest burn, was that Swerve said he was too busy for them. It was ignoring them and saying they weren't important enough.
I also like that. So quick rundown of those promos too, is that in Samoa Joe's promo, we have him basically saying that Swerve can get to the back of the line for the title. He had a shot and he didn't win. And he kind of says that he thinks that he can box with God, which I thought was kind of like a fun wink and a nod to the CM Punk, your arms are just too short to box with God, which he actually stole from someone else too. But the problem with thinking that the impossible is possible, and that the belief becomes infectious and people start believing that they can be great too. And that's fine until someone like Joe shows up and smashes him in the face. So I love that Joe was like, hope is an issue. Like, just such a great, like, the thing about you thinking that you can do this is that simply you cannot. Like, he has such an incredible way of weaving these things together of, it's so heartwarming to believe in yourself, but then I ruin it for you, and that's bad. Joe looks to attack Swerve, and then we do have Don Callis coming out here. He says exactly what you said, that he's undefeated outside of his own Callis family, right? And of note, those wins came against big people. They came against Jericho, is still presented as a big deal. Kenny Omega several times, right? Swerve and Takeshita have the same amount of wins. Would be nice if there were rankings. But he calls this place the Don Callis family house, and Swerve says, it's my house. Thank you very much. But to your point earlier, Ryan, he says that he wasn't distracted with what he had going on. The Don Callis family tree is too crisp, but he accepts it. He's going to take on Takeshita. I love that Swerve is so focused on the title. Like, some of it's about Joe, but most of it's about the title. And he doesn't give a shit about Takeshita because it's about the title. Really, really good stuff. Now that I've recapped those properly, is there anything either of you would like to add? We can just move on. Don't have to. We'll move on to a really fun main event. I had a blast with this main event. We got our I Quit match between Adam Copeland and Christian. And we have Adam Copeland as your new TNT champion, technically for the second time. This was a lot of fun. Lived up to the hype in Canada. We saw a Boston Bruins shirt being put on against the Montreal Maple Leafs shirt. I love that Christian just had to, there was no cute way to get it on him, so he just had to put it on. Like, it was so much fun. They were in the penalty box. You have them trading blows. You have them ripping jerseys off. You get a bunch of table spots. You get TLC chants from the crowd in this. But ultimately, this is an I Quit match. And this ends with Copeland, who did a blade job because this was pouring from his head, and Cage rolling Adam into the ring, laying him out horizontally. He catapults Adam onto the ladder, and the ref asks, Adam's out of breath and says no. Cage grabs the leg, tugs Adam toward the corner, Cage to the top rope with a frog splash, but Adam moves and puts him in the crossface. The ref puts the mic to Cage's face, and Cage won't quit. He turns into the hold and scrapes the damaged forehead in this. Lots of really, 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 really fun stuff. That meat of the match that I just... encapsulated. It was so much fun to me because there was still so much wrestling happening in that sequence that it made me so happy. Like, it wasn't just like this spot happened and this spot happened. It was them inflicting all these damage with all these tools to try and get the other guy to say that they quit. To me, that is the biggest thing in stipulation matches. Is I'm not like a big thunder match gal, but when they tell a story like that and they're being used, the instruments are being used to tell the story and aren't the story, that is my shit. Like, this main event was a hoot. You have two new champions at the end of this episode. Ryan, we'll start with you and then we'll throw it over to Joe. I'm just going to open the floor up and say, if you want to talk about spots, this is the match to do it. I give you peace to go and serve the spot gods. But we'll start with Ryan here.
Before Ryan starts, we're about 10 minutes behind of saying hello to Jesse Ozog. And I feel like this is a perfect time to say hello right before Ryan goes.
Hi, Jesse Ozog. Great to see you. Ryan, did you want to say hi to Jesse Ozog since I just threw it to you?
Nah.
You know what my favorite spot in the podcast was, Joe? When Jesse Ozog showed up. We're going to talk about spots in the match even more. But I absolutely adore my favorite spot of the entire night, really, was when Jesse Ozog showed up. That's no offense to anybody else in the chat. It's just a special special occurrence when Jesse Ozog comes around. But Ryan, what did you think?
My Lieutenant Colonel photo. So there you go.
Love them too.
The gear being his gear from his last match in WWE was nice. The whole Toronto theme is hilarious to me. I mean, yeah, there's Christian actually putting on the jersey. Like, Edge puts it around his head, and then Christian actually starts putting his arms in the Bruins jersey. It's just perfect. Like, he's playing along with it. That is just, but I how do I want to say this? I like what they did with the what's the name of his Spike. I like what they did with Spike. Because I really thought Spike was just going to be pulled out, look at him, and that's as far as they would get. So I liked that Christian had a little bit of nerve before he quit. Like, give Christian some credit that he's not a complete coward. So I like that
he took a lot of punishment in here, and he also sells extremely well. Like, when they're trading blows, his selling is like an underrated part of his arsenal that I think people need to kind of be more aware of.
So he's an incredible. And I just like that, again, and I guess I'm used to just in wrestling, you would take that out and he would show it to him. And he'd be like, I quit. This time he actually had to, you know, have a little fun with it. I like that they handcuffed everyone to the ring because you had to neutralize him somehow. And I like that they figured out how to do the handcuffs because AEW sometimes gets that wrong, which will always crack me up.
Yeah.
Like this time they handcuffed Hangman to the ropes and did it wrong. I really thought Mama Wayne was going to fall getting out of the ring so quick. I was waiting for him. Like, she'll never live this down if she falls. God, made me laugh. Edge's gear from his last match was blue on white, right? And this was white on blue. Sorry.
Completely different. Completely different.
So I enjoyed the whole thing. It was very violent, very aggressive. I like that they waited till the end to do all the outside stuff, though. Like, it would have been very annoying if it was a through story for the match, considering the level of violence they got to. Like, yeah, that would have just driven me nuts. But yeah, it was a bit of a find a weapon match, find a lot of hockey sticks. I'm surprised nobody lost a tooth. So it was a good time. I enjoyed it. I don't have my problem with matches like this is there's only too many spots for my brain to remember. There's too much going on.
This whole match, I called out the sequences that I liked because there was all this interconnective wrestling in it, but there was a lot of spots, and some of them were just very silly and fun. Like, that was the most Canadian thing they could have done. So, Joe, what did you think of our main event here?
I had a lot of fun with it because of the balance it had between, you know, the first half being kind of the silly part of the, you know, fall, almost like a fall count anywhere I quit match where you can go into the penalty box and do that whole hockey jersey brawl. And you can have Christian running around the halls and hiding in the women's restroom, then, you know, getting pulled out of there. I mean, so you have that silliness part before it got into the whole bloody massacre part at the end. My initial thoughts were it looked like, you know, with Adam Copeland in all blue and the Maple Leaf jersey, it looked like Captain Canada versus Captain Charisma.
Respect. I respect that.
But it, the bumps that Christian took on the ladders, whether it was when the ladder was used as a bridge between the announcer's table and the barrier, or the one where the ladder was inverted and he dropped him on the braces, the little bracket braces, yes, of the ledge. I thought that was a different type of ladder spot we don't see very often, if ever.
They're very innovative with the way they do these, right? Like, I don't have a ladder before.
It's just, you know.
Yes. Like, the way to creatively find ways to use familiar weapons is something that's very cool. And I didn't love the idea of, like, two street fighty, I quit match, whatever's main eventing both shows. But, like, they sound like they were completely different matches. So, to your point.
You literally were reading my mind. I was just about to cut in saying, like, having been able to watch both, very different. They didn't feel anything alike. Because Edge and Christian went all over the arena.
Who?
Whatever. Because Adam and Christian went all
over the arena. He just has Edge tonight. It's okay.
Cope, bro. Cope.
Because Cope and Chris went all over the arena, it felt very different because theirs was very big and insane. Whereas as much as it was a street fight, the tag match was self-contained within in and around the ring, which just gave it a different feel. Though I will say Joe called it out. The women running out of the bathroom as Christian went in.
So good.
It's like straight out of a movie. It just made me laugh so
much. That's a great little spot to do, especially during picture-in-picture when that happened. It's kind of like the silly part of it. I will say at the end, when we're talking about Spike, I mean, he took one to the yam bags, did he not?
So my question, I was going to ask after
like, where did that land?
Well, that was my question. So here was my question, because I saw that. I was going to ask you guys afterwards. Did he have it, like, I know what he would have done within the context of actually protecting Christian in, like, real life. But within the kayfabe world, did he have it flipped over so that the non-Spike side was coming up as like a first, like a warning shot?
Or did he pretend
it was the Spike side? And we're supposed to assume that Christian had one of his testicles impaled.
If you went there with that thing, I would have quit right there if you threatened to hit me in the junk.
I would still be screaming.
Yeah, it's like, I don't care about my head. Don't hit me there.
It seems bad.
Yeah.
Seems bad. I'm not qualified to weigh in so much, but it seems bad.
I guess my last thought and question maybe to both of you is, now that, you know, Copeland won this kind of chapter of their feud, and probably for all intents and purposes, their last singles match against each other, do you feel like it was a fitting send off for them if it is their last one-on-one?
I do, because I think they'll probably have a tag run before it's all said and done. And I feel like this is a good way to cap off the rivalry of that. Adam Copeland now has a title proper. What can we even say about this Christian Cage run? Like, it's been extremely effective. I don't know if it's been as effective for, like, Nick Wayne and stuff, though. Like, they need to get kill switches, whatever. Like, I couldn't care less.
Nick Wayne is a character. He needs more of a character. I think he needs more of a character work as far as like who he is, besides being this just young prodigy.
I agree. That I agree with. And I think it's actually okay right now that's what he has kind of been. Because I think there's now an evolution with the patriarchy, right? So I think that's going to be really good. So that's what I want to see next is, like, how does Nick Wayne get over in this picture? I'm intrigued to see what happens with Adam Copeland, because you can go any direction really now. And I love that they did it in Canada. And I love that it was this style match. It kind of pays homage to the feud really well, because they did a fun one at World's End that was kind of like this. I'm okay with this being sports entertainment when you have Christian Cage with the character that he has and Adam Copeland coming over from the world that he did and all of their history. Like, they were the totally awesome whatever the fuck. You know what I mean? Like, that's fun. I'm fine with that. But I think the real, like, Christian Copeland thing is going to be them probably having a tag run at some point in their 10 years. But Ryan, what do you think of what Joe asked?
So, one, I mean, this is their last match for now, but I really think it's not their last match. I think, obviously, I don't know what Cope goes off to do. He's got a whole, but I think now this is where they build Nick Wayne into a story.
Sure.
Into a character and into a story. Because now Christian is lost. He's going to be furious. He's going to be mad at his helpers because they failed him. He's probably going to start lashing out. And then Nick Wayne's going to be like, wait a minute, but you're the one who lost.
Sure.
So how dare you? And I think this is where if it holds true to what I've seen from wrestling in my life, mm-hmm. this is where Nick Wayne starts to experience a little bit of independence, a little bit of his, I'm asserting myself.
Well, not he's going to become a strong, independent woman.
That's just much kind of like life where you, as I don't know, Ryan, if you, growing up as a, you know, as a son, you're kind of like, you respect and fear your father because he could whoop your ass. But eventually you get older and big enough and it's like, well, I could probably beat up my dad now.
And as soon as my dad got his hips replaced, I knocked him out.
Oh. Well,
wow. That's a choice.
I mean, the minute his hips were gone, I just went up and took one shot in the face.
A lot of repressed anger.
No, this is the first time I think I could kick his ass successfully, so I went for it.
So I think maybe that's where Nick Wayne goes. Maybe he's like, oh, well, no, daddy is vulnerable. I can take over the patriarchy.
I mean, where does that leave Mother Wayne? It's definitely something that's a concern to me.
We're not getting into an Oedipus complex here, guys.
No, we'll save that one for next week. But you know what we're going to do is a couple of news and notes, because this was a very short episode because we were doing this as a watch along as well. And there are a couple of things of note to make note of. Most notably, the note of the Motor City Machine Guns.
Hold on. You don't get to...
Yes, I do.
We're doing news and notes because there are things to make note of. Most notably, how many times can you fit note into a sentence?
That's what I was trying to do. Commit to the bit, Ryan.
You didn't start off with a bit. You realized what you were doing and went with it. I'm so happy
when we keep going and we don't have a commercial break. It just goes...
It is. I knew exactly what I was doing. After I said the second one, I was like...
Exactly. He saw what you were doing.
Motor City Machine Guns. Contract is coming up in TNA. Legendary tag team, obviously. Chris Sabin doing some really good work against Mustafa Ali most recently in TNA. Alex Shelley, of course, fantastic wrestler. They both had independent tracks and have both reconnected as a tag team. A lot of people, including the Young Bucks, give credit to them for inspiring kind of this more modern style and being a huge piece of the foundation to lay there. Could go to WWE, could go to AEW, could work the independents. I think there's lots of possibilities. A little older as well. They might be more interested in like a hybrid backstage role, but the timing's a little weird because it feels like them showing up in this tournament might have been really fun. If the Young Bucks win it, there could be a really fun just face-to-face stare down. I have tremendous amount of interest in seeing the Motor City Machine Guns wherever. And stylistically, I think they probably are a better fit for AEW. But I will also say, of all the free agent tag teams on the market, they are like number 3 or 4 for me. I would prefer to see GYV come in. I'm also very big into the Velocities, who are on the independents and have worked around a little bit. Those teams intrigue me a little bit more. Motor City Machine Guns is probably number 3. And of course, my M&M boys, the non-models, but the shit posters of Manny and Mason doing some really cool work now that they get to wrestle for more than 4 minutes. It's cool to see what their finisher looks like and how they work and all these things. So I love to see it. I would love Motor City Machine Guns in there. I think from a knowledge base alone, they're probably worth bringing in, even just as agents and stuff. But for me, my heart's with GYV. No one says you can only pick one, right? So, but that's just kind of where my thoughts are. Joe, what do you think of a little MCMG showing up, and where should they show up?
I was trying to think where I could see them fit best as far as, you know, competition, plus what they could bring to certain promotions. I mean, if it went to WWE, I feel like NXT would make the most sense for them helping that group. But I kind of like them just almost doing an independent run for a while of bouncing around so they aren't tied to one promotion. Maybe they show up in, you know, ROH and do some work. Maybe they show up in, you know, over in Japan and do some work. Or, you know, just bouncing around a little bit in independence, I think, would be a lot more fun than battling them with a promotion right away.
I like that idea. A little bit of a let's remind some motherfuckers kind of tour would be very, very, very fun. Ryan, any thoughts on the Motor City Machine Guns? More hand signal things for you to do? No, not just right there.
What state is that? Vermont?
Is that Star Trek? Isn't that Star Trek?
Invader.
Oh, yeah, that's what time it is.
It's time. I can't do it with that hand as well. No. It's Vader time. So yes and no. I mean, they're not like a team I have a lot of experience with, to be quite honest. I was not except for when I saw Sting on, I would not watch TNA regularly. I know they're very good. It'd be cool to see them go anywhere. I'm going to do this strictly as a fan. I have more interest in them in AEW because I think even now, I think WWE's tag has improved exponentially, but I still think with the tag tournament, there's a lot more potential in AEW and a lot more fun matchups. And WWE has a habit of splitting up tag teams.
Yes, they do.
And Shelley and Sabin naturally wrestle singles all the time. So I'm like, they would last as a tag team maybe for 2 days there. Whereas AEW would let them wrestle single and tags. Like, they have no problem with that. So that's kind of why I would lean towards AEW. But if they went to WWE, they would, I mean, if they're allowed to be a tag team, they'd be incredible. I was listening to In the Weeds with Joel and Jeremy today. After they replayed Jeremy narrating a hand job, I was listening to their points, and they raised a good point that they could almost be NXT guys, but as much for coaching as it is for wrestling.
Yes,
you know, they could so that'll also depend on it too, like where they feel like they are in their careers. Do they feel like they're in a phase where they want to be doing that? So, I mean, and they could always stay in TNA. I mean, they could do a contract thing and have some indie fun but they're interesting. Of the tag teams out there, I have more interest. Again, because I don't know Motor City Machine Guns. They're not a team for me. So I have more interest in Grizzled Young Vets. I have more interest in the models because these are teams I know, teams I've seen wrestle more consistently. So it's a little bit different for me than for a team that I only know that by reputation is good.
See, sure. I'm opposite of you, Ron. I'm much more familiar with Motor City Machine Guns than I am. Like, Grizzly Young Veterans I know of from their NXT run, but that's kind of my limited knowledge of them.
Give us both. They're very different teams. Give us both.
both of those teams in matchups against teams. FTR. Both these teams. Like, yeah, I need to see Motor City Machine Guns versus FTR, and yeah, Grizzly Young Veterans versus FTR again.
I mean, but let's be fair here. The models in TNA or ROH would be amazing.
I would love them to show up in ROH because it would be so different. I'm a mark for Mandy and Mason, and I think they've now gotten to show what they're capable of in the ring in addition to being great character wrestlers. I think a lot of people thought they were fun gimmicks, and nah, they can fucking go. And Mason is a big dude, and I think his size gets lost on a lot of people. So lots of fun to be had in because it feels like AEW signed so many free agents that it's like, all right, this roster is getting crowded. So now what does that leave? And it leaves a lot. It leaves a lot of possibilities. But let's pull this train into the station early, guys. We got to do a very different type of show than we normally do. We will take a quick moment to remind you to leave a thumbs up on this video and to subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't yet. It's very much appreciated. Helps people find us in the algorithm. Also, to leave us a 5-star review. 5-star. There's no real like FTR parody that we can make, but if you could go to your podcast listening platform and leave us a review, that's also extremely helpful to us. And we will say, if you're like, oh my gosh, all these new free agents in AEW, I want to go buy some t-shirts. Well, don't forget about your friends here at the Mark Order Podcast. You're going to want to beat that shipping charge. We know you're gonna. So you might as well get another t-shirt instead of pay exorbitant shipping. Go to the Mark Order Podcast on ProWrestlingTees.com. You can get one of our 4 great designs over there. 2 double-sided. You can kind of see it on our backgrounds. You got the logo with the hand holding of the mic and also the, here it is, the font variant. So if you're wondering what our t-shirts look like, it's our backgrounds. And that saves Ryan from having to pull it up. So before we get out of here, we're going to let these fellas plug their shit. Ryan, we'll start with you.
You can find me manning all our socials at Mark Order Pod. And then you can find me not this Saturday, but most Saturdays doing a Collider Cast with my buddy Joe over there.
Aww.
We do live watch along with of a Collision. Sometimes Kate joins us, sometimes she doesn't. And other than that, you can follow my history blog, hereforhistory.com, @_hereforhistory. I should have something new up. I thought I was going to do it this week, but work got in the way. So it'll be up before the next week. That I can promise you.
Well, fucking do better, Ryan. Okay.
No, I refuse.
Joe, when you don't have the guns out, what are you up to these days?
Well, before I tell you that, I will say, I know a lot of times we sit here and kind of shell like t-shirts and we're trying to push people to buy t-shirts, but I don't know if we always have to take our word for it. I think we can listen to people like, you know, 1LT Photo, who, you know, he wears his every Wednesday.
Every single Wednesday.
And then when he goes to the shows, he wears it at the shows. And, you know, it's a good excuse to buy a shirt.
He's a Mark Order Mark. Yes. We need more. We will give you a number to join the Mark Order. Agreed.
But you can find me on social media @_AsianJoe. And in my bio, I have a link to my cereal review blog where I review various novelty cereals. And I need to do some more content. And Ryan had floated the idea of matching wrestlers to cereal, or if a wrestler was a cereal. I was going to do that, but I think I need to limit it to maybe just like one. Maybe I should start with the AEW wrestlers first.
Oh yeah. You don't have to do it everywhere.
I want to do whatever you want. So yeah. I'll try to think of some AEW wrestlers and who I think matches what cereal and kind of, you know, see who's the Cinnamon Toast Crunch of AEW.
Oh, that is the real question. You can find me at Miss Kate Fabe on social media. I'm all over Fightful. I'm too tired to do my plugs tonight, but I'm on Fightful or Fightful Select all the time. Also at Excite Wrestling on commentary. Had a heck of a weekend there. Ethan Page is now your Excite World Champion. So definitely will be interested in seeing his run and doing commentary for his matches. Definitely worth the effort with someone like Ethan Page at the helm. So very much looking to be back there in April.
Your voice made a nice little cameo in his vlog.
It did. I got to have my ending match ending called for Ethan. Very, very kind guy. Very, very sweet guy. Made me feel like a million bucks I'll tell the story real quick before we get out of there. I was walking toward him because I always see if there's something that people need me to put over before their matches. And I was walking toward him and he was like, oh my God, Kate. I was like, oh my God, Ethan. I got to tell him a story about the first time I met him, which was very important to me and very heartfelt. And then we just had a lovely conversation. He's so sweet. He made me feel like I should have been doing an autograph signing. He's just the nicest dude. And I was like, so I just wanted to see if there was anything that you wanted me to get over on commentary. And he was like, oh my God, you're doing commentary? Like, I didn't even know you were working here. I thought you were just like here and came over to say hi. I was like, no. Like, I'm on the desk. He was like, oh, awesome. So what a genuinely wonderful human being. Absolute sweetheart. So good dude. Good dude behind all that ego over there. So a really fun time. Really fun time. Give Excite Wrestling a follow if you would too. So appreciate you guys for tuning in tonight and our pared down format, which was kind of fun. It was kind of fun to do a watch along for an hour while we were recapping. It was a lot was going on, but we did our best here. So we're going to get out of here. Have a safe and wonderful rest of your week. We will not see you on Saturday for the Collider Cast, which means we will be back on Wednesday right here.
This concludes the Mark Order Podcast.